Okay, so you ever like think about how far law enforcement can go when they're investigating something,
Right.
especially when it like bumps up against people's rights?
Absolutely.
And what about when it comes to medical information? You know, that's got to be like the most private stuff.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I mean,
Man.
that's a huge area.
So today we're going to dive deep into this 1947 Colorado Supreme Court case.
Okay.
It's called Wolf v. People. And this is not just some like, you know, dusty old case.
Right.
It really digs into search warrants and medical privacy and even self-incrimination.
Yeah.
It's wild how relevant it still is today.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how these early cases still have so much to teach us
Okay.
about the legal principles we're still wrestling with today.
And at the center of this case are these two guys.
Okay.
Dr. Julius Wolf, he was a physician, and
Yeah.
then there's A.H. Montgomery, a chiropractor.
Got it.
And they were convicted of conspiracy to commit abortions.
Wow, so this is going way back.
Yeah, back to a time when, the legal landscape surrounding abortion was very different.
Right.
For those of you out there who were, really into Fourth Amendment stuff, this case is like a masterclass.
I bet.
It's really going to make you think.
I'm ready. Let's get into it.
Okay, so first things first, let's set the scene.
Okay.
What exactly were these two accused of doing?
Yeah, what's the story here?
So it seems that Montgomery was sending patients over to Wolf
Okay.
for consultations. You know, if they thought they might be pregnant?
So, like referrals.
Yeah, basically. And Wolf would like confirm the pregnancy, maybe do some follow-up care. But here's the thing. Montgomery was the one who was allegedly performing the abortions.
Oh, I see.
And the real kicker is that they were splitting the fees.
Ah, so they were in cahoots.
Exactly. They weren't just like two guys doing their own thing.
Right?
They were working together, making money off of this.
Yeah, that financial link is what really solidifies the conspiracy aspect.
Totally.
Yeah.
And, the prosecution really hammered that point home.
Makes sense.
And the Colorado Supreme Court, they bought it.
They agreed that it was a conspiracy.
Yeah, they saw that these separate actions, the referrals, the abortions, the shared payments, all of that together
Yeah.
pointed to a conspiracy to break the law.
It's a good lesson for law students.
Oh, yeah.
You know how seemingly isolated acts
Right.
can become part of a larger criminal enterprise?
Exactly. If you've got a common goal and you're coordinating,
Right.
that's a red flag.
It's all about the evidence.
And speaking of evidence,
Yeah.
the thing that really tied this whole case together was
What was it?
Dr. Wolf's appointment books.
Is appointment books?
Yeah, from 1943 and 1944.
Okay, so like patient records?
Exactly. And we're
Yeah.
not talking about, him just handing these over.
Right.
Law enforcement,
Right.
they swooped in and took those books.
And
And
did they have a warrant?
nope,
No.
no search warrant whatsoever.
Wow, so they just took
Yeah, just like that.
them.
No judge, no permission, just straight up seized them.
That's a pretty bold move.
It is. And when you think about it, they went through this doctor's private patient files.
Yeah, that raises some serious Fourth Amendment questions.
Huge Fourth Amendment implications.
Right. I mean,
Yeah.
even back then, the Fourth Amendment was all about protecting people from the government, just barging in.
Yeah, unreasonable searches and seizures.
Exactly. And everyone has a reasonable expectation of privacy,
Right.
especially when it comes to their medical information.
Totally. So the defense argued that, these appointment books,
Yeah.
they fell under that protection.
Makes sense.
Like, this wasn't just some random notebook. It
What?
had names, addresses, treatment
They're
details,
very private stuff.
and all of that was linked to Dr. Wolf.
Right.
Around the same time that Montgomery was supposedly doing these
Oh,
abortions.
wow. So this was like the smoking gun for the prosecution.
Exactly. They needed that information to build their case. So, of course, the defense, they were like, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah.
This is a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
They said it was an unreasonable search and seizure.
Exactly. So, what did the Colorado Supreme Court say about that?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting
Okay.
because their ruling in 1947, they actually said those appointment books were admissible.
They let them use the evidence.
Yeah, and their decision was based on this earlier case,
Okay.
Masantonio v. People.
What happened in that case?
Well, it was a Colorado case from way back in 1925,
Yeah.
and it basically set this precedent that allowed warrantless seizures under state law.
So they were like, look,
Yeah.
our own rules say this is fine.
Pretty much. And, this kind of shows you how the legal system works.
How so?
It's this balance between sticking to what's been decided before,
right,
and also adapting to new ideas about rights.
I see.
Back then in 1947,
yeah,
the idea that everyone in the U.S. had the same individual liberties, it was still developing.
So the states had more freedom to interpret their own constitutions.
Yeah, and their own precedents.
Interesting. So they were basically saying, our state rules trump the Fourth Amendment.
Well, it's not quite that simple.
Okay.
You're getting the idea.
Okay. And there's another really important thing to remember here.
What's that?
Back then in 1947.
Yeah.
The exclusionary rule.
You mean the rule from Weeks v. U.S.?
Exactly. That rule says you can't use illegally obtained evidence in federal court.
Right.
But guess what? It didn't apply to state courts yet.
Oh, wow. So states could do whatever they wanted.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
They had a lot more leeway in deciding what evidence was allowed.
That's a huge difference from how things work today.
It is. It shows you how much things have changed.
Totally.
So we've got this warrantless seizure.
Right.
And the defense is arguing Fourth Amendment violation.
Yeah.
But the court's like, nope, our state precedent allows it.
It's a classic legal showdown.
It is. And then they bring up another big legal argument.
What's that?
Physician-patient privilege.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
You'd think that a doctor's appointment book would be protected by that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about keeping medical information confidential.
Right. So the defense was basically saying, this is private. This should be protected.
Right. And they argued that those patient records should have been shielded by that physician-patient privilege.
But the Colorado Supreme Court didn't buy it, did they?
No, they didn't. And their reasoning was interesting.
What did they say?
They basically drew a line between the administrative stuff.
What, names and addresses?
Exactly. And then they separated that from the actual medical advice or treatment records.
Okay, so they were saying the privilege only covers the actual medical stuff.
Right. They thought the names and addresses were more like business records.
So they're looking at an appointment book and seeing it like a Rolodex.
Yeah, kind of a weird distinction, don't you think?
It does seem a bit thin.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how much medical information is digital now.
Oh, yeah, it's a whole other can of worms.
Like, could that same logic still apply today?
It's a great question, and it shows how technology is always pushing the boundaries of the law.
Totally.
I mean, back then, a physical appointment book seemed simple.
Right.
But now we leave these massive digital trails.
And it's all so sensitive.
It is, and the courts are still trying to figure out how to deal with that.
It's like a whole new world.
It is. And, you know, back in 1947, the Colorado court, they also made it clear that the physician-patient privilege belongs to the patient.
Not the doctor.
Right. Huh. And in this case, there was a woman named Mildred Cairo.
Okay.
Her information was in that appointment book.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a key witness for the prosecution.
Oh, wow.
And she testified without objecting to them using her information.
So they took that as consent.
Yeah, basically a waiver of the privilege.
So it's the patient's call.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got the Fourth Amendment argument.
Right.
And the physician-patient privilege argument.
Yeah.
And then the defense, they brought up the Fifth Amendment.
Self-incrimination.
Yeah. They said that seizing those records was basically forcing Dr. Wolf to incriminate himself.
That's a clever argument.
It is. So how did the court respond to that?
Okay, so this gets into the whole idea of compelled testimony.
Like being forced to talk.
Right, being forced to give information that can be used against you.
And they said that taking the appointment book wasn't that.
Yeah, they drew a line between compelled testimony and surrendering physical evidence.
I see.
They said the appointment book was a physical object created as part of normal business.
So it wasn't like Dr. Wolf was forced to write it.
Exactly. They didn't make him create that evidence.
So they're basically saying the Fifth Amendment protects you from being forced to talk.
Right.
But not from them taking your stuff.
Even if that stuff has incriminating information.
Wow, that's interesting.
It is. It shows you how the courts interpret these rights.
Totally. So basically they were like, tough luck. The Fifth Amendment doesn't apply here.
You got it.
Now, I know that the defendants also had some complaints about the trial itself.
Like procedural stuff.
Yeah, like they wanted separate trials.
Ah, severance motion.
Right, and they didn't like the instructions that the jury got.
Okay, so did the Colorado Supreme Court address that?
They did, but they kind of brushed it aside.
Really?
Yeah, they said those objections weren't valid.
Hmm, and why not?
Well, for the separate trials.
Yeah.
They said that the evidence against Wolf and Montgomery was all intertwined.
Because of the conspiracy.
Exactly. So they thought a joint trial was more efficient.
And fairer.
Yeah, because what could be used against one and could be used against the other.
Makes sense.
And then for the jury instructions, they just said that the instructions were fine.
Like they were accurate and followed the law.
Yeah, they didn't see any problems there.
Okay, so in the end, the Colorado Supreme Court.
They upheld the convictions.
They did, but this wasn't the end of the story, was it?
Nope, this case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Wow. So Wolf v. People became Wolf v. Colorado?
That's right. And this is where things get really interesting,
Yeah.
in terms of the Fourth Amendment.
Because this is where the Supreme Court really laid down the law.
Okay, so spill the tea. What happened?
So in Wolf v. Colorado, the U.S. Supreme Court, they said something really important. They said for the very first time that the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures, it applied to the states.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, through the 14th Amendment.
So that's a big deal.
It's huge. It's part of what we call the Incorporation Doctrine.
Which is basically applying the Bill of Rights to the states.
Exactly.
But there's a catch, right?
There is. They didn't say that state courts had to throw out illegally obtained evidence.
Oh, so they acknowledged the right,
Right.
but they didn't say how to enforce it.
Yeah, they weren't ready to force the federal exclusionary rule onto the states.
Because of that whole dual sovereignty thing.
Right. The states and the feds have their own powers.
And the Supreme Court was hesitant to step on the state's toes.
Exactly. They wanted states to come up with their own solutions for illegal searches.
But as we know, that didn't last forever.
No, it didn't. This decision in Wolf v. Colorado,
Yeah.
it was like a stepping stone to something much bigger.
You're talking about Map v. Ohio.
Exactly. One of the most important Fourth Amendment cases ever.
That's the one that said the exclusionary rule applies to everyone,
Right.
states included.
Exactly. So even though Wolf v. People was a state case about a specific crime, it ended up changing how we understand the Fourth Amendment.
And how it limits the power of the states.
It's a perfect example of how these seemingly small cases
Right.
can have massive ripple effects.
It's all connected.
And it reminds us of this constant tug of war
Between what?
between protecting individual privacy,
Yeah.
giving law enforcement the power to do their job, and making sure that trials are fair.
By only using admissible evidence.
Exactly. It's a balancing act that's still going on today.
So much to think about.
It is.
So for all you law students out there listening,
Yeah. What should they take away from all of this?
what are the big lessons from Wolfie people?
Good question.
First off, you got to understand precedent.
Stare decisis.
Yeah, like how the Colorado court used that Masantonio case.
Right. They relied on what had come before.
And then there's the physician-patient privilege. It's super important,
Absolutely.
but it's not a blanket protection.
Right. It doesn't cover every single piece of information.
And it's ultimately up to the patient to decide.
Waive it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And lastly, Wolfie people is like a landmark,
On the road to incorporating the Bill of Rights.
especially the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah. And how we got to the exclusionary rule applying to everyone.
So much legal history packed into one case.
It is. It's a fascinating journey,
It is. And it
Dan,
makes you wonder,
about what
how do these same principles,
from Wolfie people,
how do they apply today?
especially with all the technology we have now.
Right? Like, think about how much personal data is out there.
It's everywhere.
And it's all stored electronically.
So how do search warrants apply to that?
And what about our expectation of privacy?
And how do we decide what evidence is admissible?
It's like a whole new frontier.
It is, and it's one where the old rules are being tested every day.
So much for you future lawyers to grapple with.
It's exciting and a little bit daunting.
It is. But that's the beauty of the law.
It's always evolving.
Always keeping us on our toes.
That's for sure.
Thanks for joining us for another deep dive.
My pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
Until then, keep those legal brains buzzing.
And remember, the law is everywhere,
Even in your appointment books.
especially in the digital age.
Exactly.
See ya!